Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers continue to struggle in late game situations and lose to Sacramento. Oof. That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcast. It's always free. It's never behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to vent with 10,000 other subscribers about things like LA's 116-111 loss to the Sacramento Kings at the Crypt on Wednesday, which, by the way, the Crypt is starting to feel like that. A place where you bury things and people.
Certainly leads. You can bury leads there. The Lakers are very good at burying a lead there.
Oh. We've been asking, you know, because LeBron, as everyone knows, because, hey, he was Western Conference Player of the Week. LeBron has been on a bit of a heater over the last, three, 4 weeks or whatever it is. And we've kind of been asking ourselves, what would happen? What would it look like on a night where LeBron didn't have it? You know, it was off a little bit off, where the legs weren't there, whatever that might be. What would happen to the Lakers? And to some degree, I think we found out on Wednesday. It was a game where the starting lineup offered very little support beyond what LeBron put out there. Only LeBron was the only starter in double digits. Westbrook, I think, was the only other player in double digits for the Lakers.
Put this in perspective, Brian. LeBron had 30.
I'm sorry. No, the other, he was the only guys on the four guys on the bench did.
LeBron had 32 points. The other starters had 20 combined.
Yeah, that's not good. Maybe that's why I undersold the bench there. Gabriel, Westbrook, Nunn, and Max Christie all broke into double digits in that regard. And they were hideous in the last 5 minutes of the game. And this continues to be something that they cannot get right, is the ability to run an offense in the last 5 minutes of a game.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm actually going to take a little bit of exception with you saying like a night where LeBron didn't have it. LeBron had 32 points on 11 of 25 shooting, which is certainly good enough. He was 8 of 9 from the line, 8 rebounds, 9 assists. Like, I understand you weren't trying to put this loss at LeBron's.
No. I just meant like he looked, the whole team looked, but LeBron looked worn down.
Oh, he did, but
that's all I was getting at. Where you, I'm not pinning it on him, but like where,
no, I know you're not, but
he couldn't carry it by himself.
Right. But the point I'm making is this wasn't a night where LeBron's production was particularly low by any reasonable standard. Or you look at it, we're like, you know, this was a night where he was really off. Like, again, 32, 8, and 9. Should be enough to lay, you know, a nice little foundation.
Pocket money, as Grandpa used to say, around money.
You had mentioned underselling the bench initially. I think you were actually underselling LeBron too.
Well, what I meant by that was it was a night where LeBron couldn't sort of drag the team to a win. With superhuman play down the stretch, with whatever it might be, because particularly in those last 5 minutes, he was part of, you know, he had the and one where he was able to get the basket and scored that way. But, you know, he missed some jumpers. I mean, here's what they did over the last 5 minutes of this game. They started off, Andy, as they often do, with a shot clock violation. So and that's where you know,
not the only one of the game.
No. So Russ makes a bucket at the 5 minute mark, which, by the way, should have been a turnover. somehow the ball bounced back into his hands after he was struggling to get the ball to Wendy and Gabriel. And so Westbrook makes the shot there. Lakers catch a break. It goes shot clock turnover. LeBron misses a three-pointer. Patrick Beverley misses a three-pointer. Russell Westbrook misses a 25-footer. LeBron misses a two-point shot. Wendy and Gabriel offensive rebound. Wendy and Gabriel putback. That was one of their buckets that got him to 105. Then LeBron got the and one, and that was pretty much it for the Lakers.
Yeah,
they didn't score over the final minute. Another missed jumper. LeBron misses that step back, and yeah, there you go. There's your ball.
Well, and you also too, you had the clear path foul down the stretch, which is, you know, really iced this thing for Sacramento. Kendrick Nunn got, he thought at least, tapped on a three-pointer.
Did you think he was fouled? Because
no,
I did not that on my thing. He had a three-pointer that if it was called an and one, would have allowed the Lakers to tie the game or given them the opportunity to tie the game. It was not called. A lot of people thought it was a foul.
I don't think it was a foul, but what I do think for sure is rather than arguing about it, Nunn needed to get his ass back on defense, because part of the reason that Max Christie was in this position of committing what was ruled rightly a clear path foul, it's in part, and LeBron talked about this after the game with a lot of, I thought, nice leadership and understanding. You know, this was a situation, it's a new rule in terms of the way this gets officiated now, and Max Christie, as a rookie, LeBron noted, has probably never been in this situation.
It's a lot. It's a lot to think about. I know I need to get a foul, but wait a minute. I need to take four extra steps to get in front of the guy.
It's a lot to put on Christie in that situation, particularly with a rule that, like all these guys, he's not, you know, it's not an automatic reflex, but part of the reason he may have been in that situation is because Nunn was too busy arguing as opposed to getting
back. Kendrick needed to, whether it was fouled or not. And it looked like it was De'Aaron Fox might have hit him with the body a little bit, kind of leaned into him, but he certainly didn't get him with his arm.
It was not egregious, if nothing else.
And, you know,
either way, it doesn't matter in this situation.
They didn't call it. Back. From the referee's perspective, from where the referee was standing, where she was standing, it was very easy to see what that was and look like Kendrick Nunn jumped into the contact and was trying to draw a call. And so I certainly didn't think it was an egregious non-call in the way that some of the other ones have been over the last few games.
Like the one against Troy Brown, LeBron's had a couple.
The LeBron one was even more so. I mean, league said the Troy Brown play wasn't a foul. So
yeah, the league's five, wrong. I don't know what they have the league is. I don't know what they have the league watch there. Troy got killed on that play.
But you look at those last 5 minutes and it just like it's bad on paper. It was worse when you watch it. Like the execution in these last 5 minutes was as bad as it has been in any game this season for the Lakers. And that is saying something, because they've been catastrophically bad in fourth quarters, in crunch time, throughout the season, and they continue to be terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't just that they missed shots. It was the offense devolved into mush. They were missing often really crappy quality shots.
Right, you know, running the 24-second clock all the way down only to miss a 25-footer because you got to take the shot.
And then in the meantime, you know, we talk about this next. It's not just that they lost this game, Brian. They lost what was ultimately if nothing else, a gifted opportunity for them with no Domantas Sabonis in this game. And I found a couple numbers reflecting that really drive home how the Lakers did not capitalize on that absence.
Yeah, let's do that. And let's talk about Darvin Ham, who I feel like struggled after this game to maintain his hamminess, so to speak. We'll get to that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. If you're looking for a great treat, but you don't want the fat and the calories, then you got to try yourself a Built Bar. And, you know, the holidays are still just, you're feeling those effects, and everybody could stand to eat a little healthier after the damage that they did. I am part of that boat. And at the same time, though, you don't want to compromise taste. Like, that's the whole point of eating to begin with. And that's why you got to have yourself a Built Bar. With Built Bar, healthy is actually tasty. It's perfect for this New Year's resolution. And as always, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. Great flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut almond. They taste like a candy bar, but just 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and 17 grams of protein. And you don't even have to wait around for a box. Like, for years, we talked about ordering your Built Bars at Built.com, and still an option. It's a great one. But you can also get them at your local Walmart in the pharmacy section. No prescription required. Also, Sam's Club is available too. Either way, go to the spot, pick up a box with different flavors. Try them all. Built Bars. Enjoy.
Okay, you had some numbers. The Lakers, again, losing to Sacramento. No Domantas Sabonis in this game. It's not like the Lakers weren't shorthanded either, which is something worth noting, and I'll get to it in it should be the context for the angry rants that are coming from me later in the show. But the Kings without Domantas Sabonis present a very good opportunity for the Lakers to steal a game.
Yeah, and again, the caveat of no AD, no Lonnie Walker, no Austin Reeves. And I think their absence is building on these guys with mental and physical fatigue.
Right. All LeBron is tired. Schroeder, I do not think Schroeder is healthy.
He may not be. I mean, certainly
he's got that hip thing, and he didn't look healthy today.
No. And you know, he had been on a bit of a streak that really helped the Lakers for a while get through that period, this period we're in right now. And you are correct that something may be happening with him. But with Sabonis, that absence in particular, the Kings are still a good team, and they've been good all year. I think we can all agree now they are a legit quality team. But Sabonis brings certain things to the table, certain, you know, like Liam Neeson and Taken. He's got a very particular set of skills. And in this game, the Kings had 20 second chance points. They averaged 13 on the season. They had 58 points in the paint. They averaged 51 on the season. 14 offensive rebounds. They averaged 9 on the season. And Sabonis is the individual leader for the Kings in all three categories. So if nothing else, the Kings did a damn good job in this game offsetting a lot of the things that Sabonis does very well for them, advantages that he creates for them. You know, like Rashawn Holmes was a monster in this
game. Yeah, he's not been used much this year, Rashawn Holmes. They've gone with Trey Lyles more. They've used Metu more. But Holmes stepped in and played very well.
16 points, 7 of 7 from the field. 11 rebounds, 3 offensive. Like, he was very good. It was another game where Thomas Bryant inside defensively left something to be desired.
Yeah, I think teams are really starting to pick on the whole starting lineup. Really was just kind of annihilated. LeBron, you know, this was the rare game where LeBron was underwater from a plus minus standpoint, and when they were off the floor, they were actually better. But they didn't turn the ball over, you know, that part of it. They only had 6 turnovers on Wednesday after 2 on Monday, which is, you know, franchise record. So, but they follow that up with 6.
And that's impressive.
It's very good. But it just, you know, I'm simply, Darvin Ham after the game, Andy, said some stuff. He acknowledged, you know, they got up against the clock too much, particularly down the stretch. There was too much indecisiveness. And he said, it sucks to lose these close games. These are not an exact quote because there's stuff in between, but we're going to, you know, he's very confident we're going to break all the way through. We're competing at a high level. By that, he means the effort is there, and he's correct. They are trying very, very hard. I love the way that we've competed. And then he kind of caps, he was talking about what was wrong, what he didn't like, and he kind of caps it off with this. I love the way we've competed. That's all you can ask for, is to be competitive and be together. And I get what he's getting at, And I get what, you know, why he's saying that, and the coach speak and the platitudes and all that kind of stuff. But that is not the best, you know, that's not all you can ask for at this point. They need to win these games. They need to find ways to execute better in the fourth quarter. If you execute, you miss shots, you fall short against good teams while guys are injured, fine. But their execution in these moments, regardless of who's on the floor, has been terrible all year long, and it's not getting better. And I like Darvin, and I am very sympathetic to the position that he's in with the roster that he's got and the injuries. But this aspect of it is not improving, and we keep talking about it over and over and over and over again. And I'm not saying I don't know what the prescription is exactly. They tried different lineups today. Didn't run with the same guys over and over again. But, you know, they're not really calling any plays. It's very much just sort of ISO ball with Russ, ISO ball with LeBron. Hell, run a pick and roll with the two of them together and see what happens. Have LeBron set a screen for Russ when Russ has the ball.
Often works well.
It does when they do it. Do something. I mean, because this ain't it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a point about a minute and a half left in the game where Darvin subbed Kendrick Nunn in for Max Christie for offensive purposes. And he ended up doing a lot of offensive, defensive substitution down the stretch. And like, there was a part of me that got it because Nunn was actually shooting well in this game and they were playing from behind. They were looking for points. But I tweeted out at Cam Brothers, given how much things had devolved into very ISO heavy and very unsuccessful ISO play, putting in Kendrick Nunn, who while he shot well and he was efficient, the dude was hunting for his shots. And he had a couple possessions in the fourth quarter where it was clear he was going to find a way to put it up. Like, I was like, I don't know if Kendrick, even though on balance, I actually think he played fine in this game, I don't know if he's who I would want to put in a situation where things are getting so ISO heavy and the ball is sticking so much.
Yeah. Your point, Andy, 16 minutes on Wednesday, no assists, 24 minutes on Monday, one assist. He had three against Philly. In the double overtime game against Dallas, he played 20 minutes. He had one assist. In the game before against Denver, he played 24 minutes. He had one assist. He's not really flinging the ball around and setting up his teammates.
No, I'm not bringing this up. My point isn't to pick on Kendrick because, again, like I said, on balance, I thought he played fine, and they needed his scoring in this game. What made me even think about it now was just the idea of when you mentioned how ISO heavy things got and that tendency that they have that, you know, LeBron fell into it some, Russ really fell into it. These last 5 minutes are not going to go on Russ's fridge, so to speak.
It wasn't. I mean, he got off to a really good start. He was part of the reason the Lakers were actually able to make a big first quarter push and increase their lead with LeBron on the bench. After that, like the rest of the team, after that, I did not think Russ played very well.
And then just before we go to break again, it's worth noting this was on a night that Portland and the Clippers both lost.
Yeah, I was actually going to point that out later. Like, this is an expensive Minnesota loss too. And so, you know, teams the Lakers are chasing lost. And, you know, these are missed opportunities. Lakers have lost three games of the last four, I think by a total of 9 points. It's not like they're not, but that stings worse because as difficult as the circumstances are that they're playing, the opportunities have been there for them to win some games and move up. And, you know, it was funny. I tweeted this out. I retweeted this. Nikola Jokic was talking about the Nuggets tonight, who beat the Wolves and must not have played particularly well. And he noted that good teams manage to win when they don't play well. And he said bad teams find ways to lose. And, you know, even when they're up, and that's what the Lakers did tonight. I don't think the Lakers are a bad team in the sense they're, you know, they're not the Rockets. There are teams that are around the league that are worse than them, but they are, they're not a team that, that knows how to win. They're not a team that figures out how to win, that engineers wins when losses seem very possible. If anything, it's the opposite. So a little more on Darvin, a little more on Anthony Davis, some more news on him. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from the NFL to the NBA, NHL, tennis, even esports. They got it all going on at BetOnline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, which clearly you do, you're listening to one right now, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They got content over at BetOnline, and it is always the fastest, easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Before we get to AD, I do want to note, like, Darvin did say after this game, it wasn't all sunshine and lollipops. You know, he was, you know, he said, you know, we got 37 games left. We, you know, there isn't any time to sort of work through it and kind of like, we got to start winning games now. And like, we got to work with what we have and win games now, regardless of who's on the floor and who's available, which is, by the way, the correct answer. I just felt like, when I said before, like, I felt like this was the first game where he was torn between that sort of relentless pick up your players kind of optimism that he's had throughout the season, supporting his guys, talking, a disciplined line, but backing his players, backing his group, speaking optimistically about the chances of it, with combined, you know, ran up ahead on, we are running out of time, running up into, what the heck am I supposed to do? And I don't think in his brain he used the word heck. Am I supposed to do with this? Like, with these, you know, the shortcomings of what I'm working with here are really obvious. And I think all of those things felt felt present to me in Darvin Ham's post game, and he was like talking through it in real time. Yeah, it felt different on Wednesday than other post games.
And look, I mean, there's also the honest reality that Darvin is a first-time head coach, and there are mistakes that he makes that exacerbates these things. You know, we've talked before about timeouts that weren't called, you know, lineup decisions that even acknowledging who's not available were questionable, things like that. And all of these things get magnified by AD not being there, because these last few losses that they've had, one tonight, Philadelphia loss, Dallas loss, I'm not saying that if AD plays these games, they automatically win. But given how close they were without AD, to say nothing about Reeves and Walker, you can feel reasonably confident that if Anthony Davis is there, their odds, it's not just that their odds increase exponentially towards winning, it's their margin for error increases so much more.
LeBron pointed that after the game. He said, we have no margin for error. Again, I am sympathetic here, but you know, if we're going to be the front office to this point, AD, unless I missed something, has not disavowed us of the idea that they are, you know, this is a team that, you know, they're playing to get into the playoffs and think they can make, like, until somebody says differently, we're being led to believe that we're playing these games.
You mean until somebody leaks differently?
Whatever.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean,
well, there is that clip of Rich Paul and Pelinka briefly speaking to each other at the game on Wednesday night at the arena. Maybe this is what they were talking about. He was like,
maybe, but I'm just saying, like, just to make sure everybody listening understands, there will be no press conference from Rob Pelinka before the deadline where he says, we have decided to give up on the season. Like, that's, if it's obvious.
In fairness, they have. That's poor messaging. I'm not sure you should call a press conference for that. But that's it.
But Rob, it's February. We're done.
We're done.
What part of we're done do you not understand, bucko?
But you understand what I'm getting at here. Like, we are, we're, nobody's just, like, you know, led us to believe that this weren't that these games aren't for a
reason. They're vigorously pursuing Cam Reddish. It is our knowledge. It is our understanding, which we'll probably talk about more on Friday.
Do we have to? Do we have to talk about Cam Reddish?
Yes, we do, because A, there's been more rumors coming out, more reports, most notably from Mark Stein. B, we got time to fill.
I just feel like Rob, I mean, like, if the rumors are true, like, they treat Cam Reddish like he's a not safe for work website. Like it just, he's coveted in ways that I find strange. I mean, lid for every pot, I suppose, but
That's Pelinka's tab on the site.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone deserves a private moment. Who am I to judge? I'm just saying. I don't get anyone's. No, I mean, Cam Reddish is, the guy made it to the NBA, but like, he hasn't shown me or anyone else anything that would make you think, here's a guy that we want to trade for, like, to try to boost our chances for winning right now. Like, I'm nothing against the kid, but like, nobody's seen any of that.
He's big in the clutch, Brian. I'm serious. I honestly think that is the. I want to make it clear. I don't even know how much the interest exists in Cam Reddish. Like, it may be overstated by some of these reports, and I mean, leaks come from all different directions. When I bring up the clutch connection, I'm saying that's the reason why I think it persists so much.
Could be.
Is because there's the expectation that any clutch client will eventually be collected by the Lakers.
It's just, one of those things where you see it from enough people that you're like, I guess they like it.
No, I mean, I'm sure there is something rooted in reality. I guess we're having the Cam Reddish discussion now. But I guess, you know, I'm sure it's rooted in some degree of reality, but you are correct. He is a guy that at this point, even if you believe in him as a young player who's, you know, very athletic and he's got great size and stuff like that, like, in a different environment could discover himself as a player. That may be true, but that would mean he doesn't necessarily make sense as a piece you're looking to bring in to boost you several spots up the standings.
He is the ultimate "we'll fix it in post" basketball player. Where he fix the highlights in post so the ball goes through the basket and all those other things, he's fine. But that's not how the game actually works.
I mean, and look, there are surprises that happen sometimes. You know, remember when the Lakers traded Vlad Radmanovic to Charlotte for Adam Morrison and Shannon Brown? Shannon Brown was, by his own admission, a throw-in in that trade to make the salaries work, and he ended up a rotation player who contributed to two championship runs. But that was a team that was already really damn good. They just added a player who turned out to be unexpectedly better than they thought he would be in Shannon.
And a player who my wife still calls wah-wah baby.
I like Morrison, man.
I do too. But you know,
she's a good guy.
That's the only part that she remembers is the wah-wah baby. It's all very frustrating. But if people are going to keep telling me that these games are important and the Lakers are not giving up on the season and they, you know, are, you know, believe in what they have and whatever, then you got to win these games. You got to find ways to win some of these games. And, you know, they are past the point where you can be encouraged by the fact that they're competing really hard and giving themselves chances to win games where they are, to be fair, overmatched often in terms of talent. Yeah. You know, in this game Wednesday, the Lakers had the best player in LeBron James. But after that, you know, you could certainly make an argument, depending again on, you know, this being everything being a referendum on Westbrook, but, you know, Harrison Barnes and De'Aaron Fox, who, if he could play every game against the Lakers, would be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
De'Aaron Fox might end up an All-Star this year.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying, like, particularly against the Lakers. You know, Kevin Huerter is a, you know, really solid player who would look phenomenal in a Lakers jersey.
Boy, did they win that trade, Sacramento.
Oh, yeah, but Keegan Murray, excellent young rookie. You know, mm-hmm. they've got some really good players. Trey Lyles, solid veteran or whatever. I mean, relative to what the Lakers are working with, you know, LeBron, whatever you think of Russ, you know, I think an injured Dennis Schroeder, Pat Beverly was invisible in this game. He regressed in terms of his contributions. JTA only, you know, can only ask for so much. Max Christie gave him much more than you could expect from a 19-year-old, and Wenyan's still doing Wenyan stuff. But like, that's not,
and Nunn had 14 points, but
that's not
the talent discrepancy, as you said, is pronounced. But at the same time, they can't afford to lose any winnable game, and this one was winnable.
It was, and the all of these games, you go to the, you know, the Dallas game, the Philly game, they're not should have wins, you know, like where you look at it and you say, God, they should have won that game. There have been a few of those where they should have won that game. These are could-haves. And they seem to have lost about 80% of the could-haves this year. I mean, it's not a scientific stat. That's not an analytic. but like, I think if you go back through and you look at the schedule, these games that are sort of the 50-50 ball equivalent, you know, the equivalent of 50-50 balls, the Lakers have lost like 80% of them. And it's because they can't execute down the stretch. It's because they are a really bad team.
Ironically, they're 4-3 in 3-point games.
Yeah, true. But like, this was this turned out to be a 5-point game.
Right. That's true.
So, you know, the record, I guess, is the record, but
they don't
overreact? Does it seem like they've lost a lot of these could haves?
No, and some of the could haves didn't end up 3-point games or tight games. There were games that the Lakers should have won that turned into a bigger, you know, a bigger spread, whatever. If nothing else, you are not confident in the Lakers down the stretch in games, whether they win or lose.
And that to me is, there are teams out there that execute better. Look, bad teams tend to suck in clutch situations when the defense cranks up and the pressure is higher and everybody's locked in and all that stuff. That's why they're bad. But, you know, there are bad teams that are undermanned that still kind of do it better than the Lakers do. And this is a place where Darvin, I think, has at the very least been wholly unable to solve the problem. Anyway.
Now the biggest solution is, unfortunately, they need AD back.
Yeah. And he is apparently doing some more on-court work. Every time they start talking about it, you get really excited about it. But like, I still think, you know, go back to what Sham said. They're hoping for a handful of games before the All-Star break. That's February, folks. I don't know where they're going to be in February if they can't start winning some of these could-haves. Yeah. All right, Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show, to see me be very, very frustrated. Very frustrated on Wednesday night. Join the community there, and we will see everybody on Friday.